here in 1945, kind of as newlyweds and during the war, continuing at our war duty. And of course, we found that Juneau was a rest and recreation spot for soldiers, and everything that was missing in the Bay Area where we were from was here in abundance in Alaska, including a lot of good friends. And although we left after 2 years of work to go back east and get George's PhD, we realized that it was a wonderful place to live, and we came back and have been here ever since. I always planned to be a writer, as I tell the kids, but I got really busy raising six children, and it wasn't until about 5 or 6 years ago that I realized I had the time and the energy to start writing again, and so I did. And so the King Island book is not the first book I have written. The first book I wrote was, to start out again, was a fantasy about a witch who needed a dragon and conjured up a dinosaur instead. But Goodbye, My Island is the first book that a publisher has taken. I'm happy to tell you all that they are now taking a second book about King Island, which Ree and I wrote originally and which got me interested in King Island, about something that happened to her while she really lived on King Island for that famous year she taught school there. And Green Willow has agreed to publish it, and it will be a full-color picture book. Now, that's probably enough about me. Oh, maybe I should tell you that I write not with a word processor, which there is in the house, but because I'm such a terrible typist, I write by hand in a notebook, and then I take it to a gal who types extremely well, and she types it up in beautiful form for me, and then I send them off from there and from that point, and generally get them back with a nice rejection slip, but that's part of the game.
Congratulations on the picture book.
But that's a wonderful piece of news. Full color with Ree's pictures on every page.
Yeah, I remember that was one of the things I thought about when I read the book, was that I missed all the color that, you know, is so distinctive about her work. Let's not talk about you in third person, Ree. Can you give us just a little background about how you got started drawing and where you came from and all that stuff?
Yeah, you want me to talk now then for a few minutes?
Yes, this is your cue.
I came up to Alaska in 1950 from California, and I'm 62 years old. I was educated both in Holland and in the United States. My parents were both Dutch, and my art education is really, really rather minimal. Of course, I took art in high school. I always was, you know, I realized even from a very small child that I drew rather nicely, and when you do something rather nicely, you like to continue to do it, and so that's why I took art classes in high school, and then during World War II, I was in the WAC, and there, that's the Women's Army Corps, and there they sent me, because of my interest and experience in art, they sent me to Washington and Lee University to take stage and set and costume design. I've also taken a few short courses in art in Juneau, at the University of Alaska, and also one in Sitka. What really got me into painting full-time, though, was when I moved up to Alaska and really fell in love with Alaska. It's such a beautiful state, and there's it's so unique, and so many things going on here, the type of things that I like to paint, that I just started and I never stopped. And three of my favorite subjects, I think, are painting people and actually, you might say, painting Alaskan people and the type of things that Alaska people do, short of government workers, of course. But like fishermen mending their nets and children skiing and sledding and all sorts of good things like that. So I guess that's enough from me for a minute.
Okay. You guys sound like you've been on audio before. You're careful not to go over too long.
Oh, well, I never have been on audio.
Well, you sound like you're a natural.
Oh, well, good. That's our natural modesty asserting itself. Yes.
I was curious, since you said that you had studied in Washington and that, what sorts of things are, is any of your work published that is not, I've never seen anything that isn't Alaskan. That's, I was curious as to whatever else you had painted.
Well, I did I did one mural before I came up to Alaska in Morton, Washington. That was kind of fun because at that time I was just rather recently married, and we had very little money. And a new grocery store asked me to do a mural, and they wanted them. What they wanted was an illustrated map, because people always came in, not only bought groceries, but then said, "How do you get to Mount Rainier, and how do you get here, there, and the other place?" And so then each time they had to get out a piece of paper and draw a little map for these tourists that were going through. So they had the brainstorm that I should do a big mural on this wall of an illustrated map, so that they could just point to the map and say, "There you are." But the interesting thing about that mural is that they offered to pay me in groceries. And so we ate very well for quite a long time. It was a fun thing to do, and it was fun to get paid in groceries. But before I came up to Alaska, I never had any reproductions made or silk screened. Never did any silk screen prints, nor had I ever illustrated anything such as a book or a pamphlet or anything like that.
Okay, that sounds interesting. Got the barter system down. Sounds like we're getting interference here. I'm not sure who's trying to call in. This happens often, and we wind up getting all sorts of businesses and different conversations going, so we'll just bear with it a little bit. I don't necessarily want to hog the microphone. I think this is a rare opportunity that students, as far away it seems sometimes that we are, that we can actually have, people who've actually published books and done interesting things online to talk to. So let me start off and allow any of you, those of you who are online, and you have some of the notes and stuff that we made from talking about the book, what would you like to ask either Jean or Ree? And if I could just ask you just to phrase your question to one or the other, or to both of them, directed, and then and say who you are and where you're from.
Has my line gone dead, or is no one talking?
I think no one's talking.
Oh.
Yeah, that's one of the things with this. There's always usually another conversation going on at each site, so I try my best to count like 5 seconds before I interrupt again.
Oh, I see.
Ree, this is Oscar in Anchorage.
Hi, Oscar.
You had taught on King Island?
That's right, I did, in 1951 and 1952.
Like, were you there before you were teaching, or were you just stationed there?
Well, I'll tell you, we went up there for the purpose of teaching, and neither my former husband or I are teachers, but back in 1951 and 52, they had a very hard time getting, the BIA had a very hard time getting people to go out to the smaller villages. My husband, former husband, is a geologist, wanted to quit his job and get a grub stake, get some money ahead. And so we thought it would be a neat idea to apply to the BIA to see if they would take us as teachers at one of the remote villages. And because my husband did have a college degree, would take us, and he would be a principal teacher, and I would be the teacher. They gave us a choice of several schools, and so then we the library and looked up these various places, and we thought, oh, King Island looks by far the most interesting. So that's where we went and enjoyed it tremendously and taught just 1 year.
What were some of the other choices that you had besides King Island?
I think I was trying to think of that as I was talking to you. It seems to me one of them was Barrow.
And perhaps Sleep Mute was another one. But there were, I think, three choices. What do you think? You think I made the right choice?
I don't know. I don't know what it was like back in 1952. I'm not that old.
It was absolutely marvelous. There were about 150 people there, and they just strictly lived off the land or off the ocean, you might say. They were very happy, and they were marvelous hunters, and the children were tremendous. The only thing is that hardly anyone spoke any English, but that didn't seem to matter too much. There were a few men, Paul Tiolana and Peter Atsuna, and a few others who spoke English quite well, but most of them did not. But as I say, it really didn't matter much, because you can still always get along, you know, by sign language and good smiles and stuff like that.
I don't know whether you or Jean should answer this one, but she said that she had taken an interest in writing about something that you had done there. I'd like to know it.
Oh, yes, that's the subject of the picture book. It happened when Ree was there that the priest had died the year before, before she and her husband got on the island, and the King Islanders were very anxious for the priest to come, and he was on the North Star, but the weather was so bad they couldn't put the Rumiaks out into the Bering Sea to pick him off the boat. And so it was a question of would they be able to get him, or would it was, the North Star was about to make its last trip south. And so that's the basis for the story. You know, when we taught school there, it was 1951-52, as she said, and the story that I write takes place a dozen years later.
That's the current story that you wrote, right, Jean?
But the picture book story will take place in 1951-52, and recounts this actual experience that Ree had when she was on the island.
Okay, thank you. That's all I got. That's all the questions that I have.
Okay, great. Bev?
She stepped out a minute. Can I help you? This is Linda.
I'm going to hang up and try again. I think this interference we're getting is from my, I don't know, phone with two lines besides my own, and people are trying to call and they're hitting my line too. So I'm going to try to get another connection here.
Okay, Mike. Ree, I was wondering how you and Jean ever got together to write this book. This is Linda in Kotzebue.
Oh, hi, Linda. We've known each other for many years, practically ever since I came to Juneau in 1950. And I told her one time, well, I've spoken often about this great year that I had on King Island, and I told her one time about a specific, about the fact that one particular family was leaving the summer that after we'd been there for the full school year, and we were leaving too, and how sad this little girl was. And around that, Jean, I think I should let you tell that. Around that, you kind of wove the story.
Well, that did give me the idea that it must have been very sad for them to leave the island, and that it would make a rather dramatic and tellable story to talk about that through the eyes of a young girl. And so that's how I happened to think of the Goodbye My Island story. The picture book, which we wrote first, Ree and I got together over that because she knew that I was trying to write for children, and so she brought this incident that had happened to her about the priest having to be brought from the island, or else if they didn't get him that very day, the North Star would take him south again, and they wouldn't have one all year long. She thought the incident, the way they got him, would make a very good picture book for children, and so she knew I was writing for children, and she said that. Would I write the story, and then of course she would do the pictures. And so we did do that, and we've been trying to sell it for several years. That preceded the King Island, the Goodbye My Island story, by two or three years, didn't it, Ree?
Yes, it did, right.
Although we got lots of publishing interest in it, nobody was willing to risk a first-time author and a first-time illustrator on the national scene with the picture book, because picture books are the very most expensive books that, that publishers put out. They cost the most because of the five-color reproduction. So it wasn't until sometime after that, that when we were talking about King Island one day, that the idea for Goodbye My Island was born in my mind. And I wrote it, and then I took it to Ree, and she didn't illustrate it until the publisher had accepted it and asked me to recommend somebody to illustrate it. And of course, I recommended her right away. And so that's how we got together on that project. The picture book project we got together on as a venture that we hoped would succeed. And now that Goodbye My Island has succeeded and gotten good reviews, the same publisher is interested in publishing the other story.
Ree, did you have any pictures or drawings that you did while you were on the island to help you illustrate the book?
Yes, I certainly did. My former husband was asked to do, he wasn't asked, but he asked the National Geographic if they would be interested in a photo story of our year on King Island, and they wrote back before we got there, of course, and said, yes, they would be interested in that. So he took a lot of photographs, but I just sketched, and I must have done several hundred sketches while I was there. Whenever I had some free time, I'd do some sketches, and of course I had plenty of free time because the school was a one-room schoolroom, and I taught first, second, and third grade, and my former husband taught fourth, fifth, and sixth grade. So I had in the afternoon, and I taught in the morning, so I had a half a day off and did a lot of sketching. Luckily, I had plenty of material to do my sketches and my finished drawings for this book, and I'll have plenty of material to do it for this new book that we're doing that will be the full-color book.
Jean, this is Linda again. I was wondering on how you got your idea for this story. Did you have to really interview Ree in order to get the feelings down the way you expressed them, which I thought was real good?
I did considerable research. I read a lot of, I've always been interested in Eskimo culture and Eskimo people, so I've read a lot about them, whatever there is to read. I've pretty much read, and of course I've lived in Alaska a long time where we're kind of interested in parts of ourselves here, but I did read quite a bit that I could find in the newspapers about the King Islanders in the Tundra Times and the Nome Nugget and the Fairbanks News Miner, and then sort of drew on my own background of knowledge. And I didn't actually, I did ask Ree questions. Whenever I had a question, I simply called her up and talked to her about it, or talked to her when I saw her. She didn't actually see the story till it was entirely finished. But I did ask her questions all the time, because the minute it was finished, I took it over to her and asked her to read it and make sure that I hadn't put something in that could not really have taken place there.
Thank you.
I'm just curious to know who Linda is and who Oscar is. It's lots of fun talking with them. Are you both students in the Oscar U in the Anchorage School and you, Linda, in Kotzebue?
This is Oscar. I'm from Kotzebue. I go to the Chukchi Community College, and so does Linda. We're both students here, and I'm just in Anchorage for the week or two.
Oh, I see. Great. How about you, Linda?
She said she was a student there, too.
Oh, right. Just teaching at school. Oh, that's fun.
Have either of you ever been to Kotzebue?
Yes, we were there in December.
Oh, yes, that's right. I remember seeing you at the school.
Came over to the community college.
I was there also in December, of course, and then I've been there several times before. One time, Dr. Mala, whom you may know, who's part Eskimo Mo himself, is related to the people at Buckland, and he asked if I could come along on one of their whale hunts at Elephant Point, and they said sure, and so I went along and I did a lot of sketches there, and we were there for about 5 days or so. I had a great time, and then, as I say, I went to Kotzebue to get there, and spent a few days in Kotzebue and enjoyed that very much. But that was in the summer. And it was certainly entirely different than it was a few months ago in December.
I was in Kotzebue in April in 1977 with the St. Paul Singers. We did a concert there. So December was my second time in Kotzebue, too. And we're coming again in April, aren't we, Ree? Or is April going to be a good time for you?
I don't know. I didn't know we were going up there in April.
Well, you know the grant that Bev asked for us to come up and do a videotape?
Yeah.
She told me today that that's been granted, and so we get to do that.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I thought that this was the instead, so to speak.
No.
Oh, perfect, lovely.
So we'll be back again.
That's good news. I really look forward to that.
Yeah, when we get all organized, we're going to have a meeting with Menelik and Nana and try to organize that. And I'm sorry, I just hadn't called you since you were out of town, Ree.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm certainly interested and happy to hear about this.
Maybe that would be since you guys were a bit curious about the students, that might be a good idea to have them just say a little bit about themselves, who they are, where they work. Linda's saying, start with somebody else first this time. I usually pick on the people wherever I am, and they get the worst of it. But that might be nice. I think I've filled the people in a little bit about the two of you, and of course they've read your book and they kind of know where you're coming from. So maybe it would be fun for the two of you to hear who these people are. So, all right, Oscar, why don't you start?
Okay. My name is Oscar Walker. I'm 23 years old. I lived in Kotzebue all my life, except for the last 2 weeks. I've been in Anchorage. And I'm teacher's aide at the high school. And I'm in Beverly Grogan's literature class. That's great.
You're also working on what, your teaching degree, is that right?
Trying.
Okay. How close are you to getting your AA?
Got about 1 more year.
Okay, good. Okay. Okay, Dorothy, how about you?
Hi, my name is Dorothy Foxglove. I'm from Solwick. I've been going to school at the Chesapeake College since September. But I committed to students.
And have you signed up to work on a particular degree? Are you working towards your teaching degree?
Teaching degree.
Yeah, Dorothy's always around the school somewhere. She's close by, so I know she's working in there towards it somewhere. Let's see, is Mike back on?
Yep, I just got back on. What are we doing?
We're introducing ourselves, and this will give you about 2 seconds to think about what you're going to say. Just having everybody say who they are and introduce yourself to Ree and Jean so that they kind of have an idea of who they're talking to as well.
Okay, I'm Mike Zabel. I'm from Norvik. I lived in Alaska about 20 years. I hope to go to the University of Fairbanks next year and work on a degree for secondary education. I'm probably the only one in the group who hasn't read your book because I haven't received it yet, and I don't think Bev knows this.
No. I didn't know that.
No. I didn't realize it when I wrote to you. I checked when I got back this week, and I didn't have it, so...
Oh, that's too bad. The one above? Look forward to.
Pardon me?
You have something to look forward to.
Yes, well, I'm kind of unprepared for this thing because I haven't read it.
Well, we'll have to put it in another order. I think this has been our... the error part of our trial and error, figuring out how to deliver books all over this region, and next semester should be a lot better. This course was particularly difficult because we had so many books.
it's partly my fault too, because I should have checked earlier. I just didn't realize I didn't have them all.
Okay, we'll see what we can do about that. I think too, a lot of these books came in right around Christmas, and a lot of us bought them for Christmas presents, and we may have read, that's why we had to order a couple of different times. Okay, Linda.
My name is Linda Jewell. I'm 31. I'm originally from Bethel, but I married and lived here in Kotzebue for the last 11 years. And I work at the housing office during the day, and I raise 3 kids and feed my husband and go to school at night.
What degree are you aiming for, Linda?
I'm looking towards business education.
Well, it sounds to me like all your pupils are definitely into things that will improve themselves in the area in which they live.
That's a question I'd like to just throw out for any of the students. How many of you plan to, for example, Mike, you said you were going to go out to Fairbanks. Do you intend to return to Norvik and do whatever you do where you're from?
Yes.
I know Oscar does, because I don't think he could give up hunting wolverines and wolves. Okay, anybody else got questions for Gene and Reed?
This is Oscar again. This is kind of a different question off the book subject, but we had read a book called Tisha,
mm-hmm.
and there was some problems that a teacher had gone through in that book. I wanted to know if Reed had the same problems or some of the same.
Well, I can't tell you because I didn't read Tisha.
Oh.
Tell me about it.
Well, there's a racial problem. Were you the only white people there, or were there other white people?
No, we were the only white people there, except for Father George Carroll, who was the new priest that came in, and he was also a white person.
Oh. Did you guys have any problems fitting in?
No, none at all. It was just a real good year. No problems at all.
Hmm.
In the book, Tisha, she has considerable problem with the other white people in the community because she is thought to favor the Indians. In fact, she takes in 2 Indian children.
Oh, yeah, well, there weren't any other white people on the island besides the 3 of us. And there was just no problem at all. We all liked each other very much, I think. I certainly liked everybody, and I think they liked us too. And Father Carroll, of course, is very popular. He's a marvelous man. In fact, I just saw him recently in Fairbanks. Gene and I both saw him. I hadn't seen him in 31 years, and not since I had left King Island, so it's just great seeing him again.
He was a very spry 82-year-old gentleman.
Marvelous man. And this new book that we're doing, you know, will be about him coming to the island. And to buy my island, Gene used a fake name, you might say. She talked about Father Tomas. Isn't that how you call him, Gene?
Mm-hmm.
But in this next book, we have decided that we would use his real name because we thought it might be a nice thing for him and also for the King Islanders who knew him and liked it so much.
Gene or Reed, did you have any of the King Islanders read the book before you had it published?
No, there weren't any King Islanders handy by in Juneau to check it with. We can tell you about giving it to one afterwards, however.
Yes, interestingly enough, this one man that I gave it to later had lived in Juneau, George Mayak, and he'd lived in Juneau for a number of years. He was there for about 10 or 12 years, and I saw him frequently. But then he left Juneau and went up to the North Slope. Well, I knew he was up at the North Slope, and I went up there this September, and I took Goodbye My Island with me, No, I didn't. I take it back. I didn't take it with me. I knew he was up there, but I didn't take it with me. And I saw him up there, and he had heard about the book. And And he had wondered. He was a little concerned about it. And I told him it was about it when I told him the story more or less, and that it was essentially about a 12-year-old girl. He thought he might like it. And so I said, well, George, I'll send you a copy, provided you write me a critique of exactly what you think of it. And he said, okay, I'll do that. So I sent him the book, but I still haven't gotten the critique. And next time I see him, I'll sure remind him of that. But I'm really eager to see him again. I did meet one lady in, I think it was in Nome, and she had read the book, a former King Island person. Can't think of her name now. She wasn't on King Island when I was there. And she had read the book, and she smiled at me, and she said, it's all right. Smile on her face, meaning that, you know, that she thought it was a good book. And I felt really good about that.
And we did talk to Paul Tialano's daughter in Anchorage and a friend of hers who came to buy the book. And in fact, they bought several copies, as I recall it. And there was a King Island, a woman married to a King Islander who came to the autograph party in Juneau and bought several copies, said how much she liked it.
Yeah, that was one reason we were really eager to get up to Nome and Kotzebue in the area where people are familiar and know the King Islanders, and we might meet King Islanders also, because since we've written about them, we wanted to see how they felt about the book, and we wanted to talk it over with them. And of course we did. We went to the school in Nome, and I asked them how many King Islanders or kids in this particular group that I was talking to, how many of you have fathers or grandfathers and grandmothers who were from King Island, and a heck of a lot of them raised their hands. And so then I asked them their last names, you know, and they were all familiar to me. It was just really a good feeling. But the thing that I thought was so interesting, and it really was a great shock to me, is that about 30 years have elapsed since I was...
I called back to the bridge and got through again.
Okay.
Both of us are back then.
Excuse me, Bev in Kotzebue has rejoined you as well.
All right.
Oh, good.
Is that everybody?
Mike just said he's there.
You were just saying,
I don't know where I was cut off, but I said that it's really surprised me that I had the feeling that most of these youngsters had very little idea of what life was like on King Island back then. And of course, it's not surprising, because I have no idea what life was like, or very little of what life was like the period of my grandfather. So I think this book, Goodbye My Island, gives a good feeling of the lifestyle on King Island at that time. And I think for that reason, it would be very interesting for these young people whose fathers and grandparents lived on King Island, because it's kind of, it gives them an idea of what it was like there, and it might be a good kind of memory of a memorial of King Island or something like that.
Ben?
Yes?
I did not get your tape of the class, so I would be very interested in hearing some of the answers to the study questions. For instance, the answer to question number 2, Esther's father took the position that the traditional Eskimo ways were no longer enough to survive. Now, almost 30 years later, do you feel Esther's father's position was the right one?
Yeah, I was just thinking about that myself. I think it would be nice to talk about it when you're here, too, because then you can also tell us if our inclinations were right or how we picked up some of the information. Let me just open it up to the students.
Excuse me, Stelowick has rejoined you.
Hi, Dorothy. You're still out there, Dorothy? Dorothy, are you with us? Karen, I'm not sure if Dorothy can hear us or what's happened with Selowik. I guess we lost the bridge operator too. Well, those of you that are on and have the study questions, I guess Oscar, you were and Dorothy were the only ones that were on with us last, or, well, Linda, you were on with us last week. Okay, and you finished the book now. Let me just open it up to you guys who've gotten a chance to read the book. Do you believe that Esther's father took that position? And if so, do you think he was right?
I think her father was wise in his choice for his family's benefit. In 30 years ago, I'm sure that was a tough question, but seeing how much they've retained their culture, even though they're away from their island, I'm sure he didn't regret his decision.
Tell me, how have they retained their culture? In what way, now, would you say that they have retained their culture? I do know that a number of the King Islanders go back to the island in the spring to gather eggs, or perhaps to hunt for walrus. Perhaps that's what you mean, right?
Yeah, I think by retaining their identity is calling themselves King Islanders rather than the Gnome people. I know there is a separation there, and I know they're strong, like in their dancing, the wolf dancing, their artwork. I don't know anything about the island other than what I read in your book, but I don't know.
And then they also go Cape Woolly in the summer, don't they? So that's a good bond there that remains.
It seemed like we have another student who's unfortunately not with us tonight, Margaret Sheldon. I don't know if that last name rings a bell for you, Ree, but she has some relatives, and I think she herself, she lived in Nome, I guess, for a while, and then she had some relatives on King Island. And she was saying last week that they've moved into a certain section of Nome and sort of, you know, I don't know, I imagine it kind of like, say, the Jewish section of New York or something like that, where they call it East Nome, is that right? I don't know if anybody online knows that.
Or Bering Straits, a housing development or something like that. Yes, I visited some of them there, and I think you're right. I think they do, quite a few of them live in that, when we were there, remember? That's right, uh-huh, right. And they also have a King Island community building there, as I recall. Is that one right there? In this area.
Is that the HUD housing?
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. Yeah, well, I'm glad that they still keep some of their, retain some of their culture, because I think it's kind of unfortunate if a nation loses their culture. It's bad enough that they lose a lot of it, but it's really bad if they lose it all. So I'm glad that the King Islanders still retain some of that.
During this summer here in Kotzebue, we have a 3-day trade fair event, and the King Islanders have come down a couple of times to share their dancing, plus their artwork with the people of this area.
Uh-huh. When does that take place?
It takes place usually the 3 days after the 4th of July, on a weekend.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Question number 3, I'd like to hear you talk about a little bit too. What are your feelings about the still changing society?
giving them a minute to think about this, Jean, one other book that we just read previous to this was a Kiviak. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but in that story, it's an Eskimo from the Round Barrel region. And he sort of changed with the times as all the modern conventions did come in. And I wanted to throw this in. I read it in one of the students' questions. She's not here tonight, so I thought I would just throw it out, is that we talked about how if the King Islanders hadn't kept up, I mean, they were sort of, they could have stayed off by themselves. They were, you know, fairly isolated. But it seems like with the rest of the world getting motorboats and either taking so much more of the land, there would be less walrus to get because now it would be harder for them to keep to the old ways. Likewise, in Akiviak, I think he kind of had the foresight to see that too and began to adapt to the ways. And one of the quotes in that book was that the things are going the way they are, and so they're going my way. And that was one of the things that we talked about in that book.
Well, how do you spell the name of that book? K-I-V-I-A-K?
A-K-I-A-V-I-A-K, I think.
Oh, okay. I'll see if I can find it. I'd like to read it.
It's by Carr Rodahl. K-A-R-E-R-O-D-A-H-L.
R-O-D-A-H-L?
Right. The Juno Library has a copy of it. I saw it there.
Good.
Okay, guys, how about number three? What do you think about this is what we also, with the Kiviak, we talked about capitalism and cash society coming in and taking over the barter system and that sort of thing.
What do I think of that? Are you asking me what I think about it? Well, I guess if the barter system ends and the cash society takes over, the cash system takes over, that means that in order to get cash, you have to have jobs. And of course, in the barter system, as it was on King Island, well, actually, I don't even know if it exists on King Island, but the barter system, it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to get jobs. And when you get jobs, you often get involved in 8 to 4:30 type of thing. And that, that of course, isn't quite as satisfactory a life as, well, I shouldn't even say that. But of course, that's entirely different than the barter system life. What do you say about that, Jean? Well, of course, that's the first step.
Yeah. Out of your society and into another one is that job business. Mm. Of course, it's difficult up north because there simply aren't enough jobs.
Now, that is the main thing, because it seems like both things go on simultaneously. The one thing that seems to be real confusing, and I would just like, you know, some of the students maybe to answer this, is the corporation is set up now as a capitalistic sort of institution, going about things, and but yet still trying to hold on to the old traditions and heritages. This always gets Linda riled up because her husband works for Nana. So, but I think sometimes it does present some sort of I don't know, maybe does it present a contradiction?
I think my feeling on capitalism is when we do want the modern conveniences, electricity, water and sewer, after we do get them, along after that comes a bill to pay for them, and trying to rely on a subsistence lifestyle does not bring in the cash required to pay for these other conveniences that were introduced to us. So it's a choice. Do you want to pay for your conveniences and enjoy them, or do you want to just live your subsistence lifestyle and not have the conveniences? I think that's where the division on subsistence and capitalism lays.
And of course, if you live in a place like Nome, you're more or less forced to
live on the cash system, I would think. I think it would be awfully hard to live a subsistence life in a town like Nome, where it might be easier to do it after a fashion at Cape Woolley or at Buckland or King Island or Little Diomede or a place like that.
Yes, it is difficult. Even here in Kotzebue, we find a lot of people depend on subsistence, not totally, but to supplement what little income they do have.
Right. That's the compromise answer that I think most people have to make, is subsistence where they can, and they have to eke out their subsistence then with some kind of a cash job to pay for, as you say, the conveniences.
This is where the notion with education becomes such a confusing issue, is that it's hard for people who are living, you know, mostly subsistence and maybe have a small job that would, you know, pay for some of the conveniences, to kind of see the benefit that, say, English 100 is going to get them. It's hard to try to draw that correlation that, you know, you need this little piece of paper that says you can have this job in order to get some of the jobs that would, you know, ease the burden a little bit. I don't know. What do some of you think about that?
Hello, Beth. This is Dorothy.
Yeah, Dorothy, go ahead.
Yeah, I just got back online. I lost you for 15 minutes. There was a problem between here and Anchorage.
Okay, that's why they said you were back online, and then we didn't hear from you. We're, if you've got your study questions, we're kind of going over number three.
The value I see in getting a, like what I'm going for, is teaching a certificate. I know it's required, you need a degree to get a teaching job. I think Nana's or the corporation standpoint, or